माता जी, श्री सुख उवाच, श्री सुखदेव गोस्वामी सेड, गोपवृद्धः, द एल्डरली पर्सन्स एमंग द काउहर्ड मेन, महा उत्पातन, वेरी ग्रेट डिस्टर्बेंसेस, अनुभूया after experiencing Brihadvane in the place known as Brihadvana, Nanda Adaya, the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj, Samagamya, assembled, came together, Vrajakaryam, the business of Vrajabhumi, Amantrayan, deliberated on how to stop the continuous disturbances in Mahavan. Translation. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Then one time, having seen the great disturbances in Brihadvan, all the elderly persons among the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj assembled and began to consider what to do to stop the continuous disturbing situations in Vraja. Text number 22. At this meeting of all the inhabitants of Gokul, a cowherd man named Upananda, who was the most mature in age and knowledge and was very experienced according to time, circumstances and country, made this suggestion for the benefit of Rama and Krishna. Text number 23. He said, "My dear friends, the cowherd men, in order to do good to this place, Gokula, we should leave it. Because so many disturbances are always occurring here, just for the purpose of killing Rama and Krishna." Text 24. The child Krishna, simply by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was somehow or the other rescued from the hands of the Rakshashi Putana, who was determined to kill him. Then again, by the mercy of the Supreme Godhead, the handcart missed falling upon the child. Text 25. Then again, the demon Trinavarta, in the form of a whirlwind, took the child away into the dangerous sky to kill him. But the demon fell down onto a slab of stone. In that case also, by the mercy of Lord Vishnu or his associates, the child was saved. Text number 26. Even the other day, neither Krishna nor any of his playmates died from the falling of the two trees, although the children were near the trees or even between them. This also is to be considered the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text number 27.
Yavad aupati korishto vrajam nabi bhaveditaha tavad balan upadaya Yasyamo Nyatrasanugaha.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. All these incidents are being caused by some unknown demon. Before he comes here to create another disturbance, it is our duty to go somewhere else with the boys until there are no more disturbances. Purport. Upananda suggested, by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, Krishna has always been saved from so many dangerous incidents. Now let us leave this place and go some place where we may worship Lord Vishnu undisturbed, before there is another cause of death from some demon who may attack us. A devotee desires only that he may execute devotional service undisturbed. Actually, we see, however, that even during the presence of Krishna, when Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men had the Supreme Personality of Godhead in their presence, there were disturbances. Of course, in every case, Krishna came out victorious. The instruction we may derive from this is that we should not be disturbed by so-called disturbances. There have been so many disturbances to our Krishna consciousness movement, but we cannot give up our forward march. On the contrary, people are receiving the movement very enthusiastically all over the world, and they are purchasing literature about Krishna consciousness with redoubled energy. Thus, there are both encouragements and disturbances. This was so even in Krishna's time.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Ramo 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 Hare Hare
All these incidents are being caused by some unknown demon. Before he comes here to create another disturbance, it's our duty to go somewhere else with the boys until there are no more disturbances. Hare Krishna. Seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, that we can speak something on this beautiful words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada has given such a nice purport. So, till yesterday, we heard this beautiful class of Nanda Dulal Prabhu, where Mother Yashoda is continuing to serve Krishna and Balaram, and finally that particular verse ends with Sukadev Maharaj explaining that Yashoda Mata took Krishna by her hand along with Balaram and brought them home, where she performed her duties of fully bathing them, dressing them and feeding them. And suddenly today we see a little bit of an about turn in the whole description by Sukadev Maharaj, where we are now setting the scene for discussions among the elders of Gokul, who are so concerned about so many demons who are attacking Gokul, and then they are now considering that they should now move to a place where there will not be so much of disturbances. And here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that actually, if one sees, there is no place where there is no disturbance. In this material world, it is a place of disturbance. Right? This is Dukkhalai Ashashvatam. This is a place of misery, and is a place which is temporary. And a place which is miserable and a place which is temporary, obviously is going to be a place where there's going to be disturbances at every step of our life. And we see, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning over here, that even during Krishna's time there were disturbances. And if you see from the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, not just during Krishna's time, even before you know, like we have this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, you know. Now Dhruva Maharaj was a small boy of 5 years of age, and typically that is the age where, you know, there is actually no disturbance in one's life, you know, if you are situated like in a situation like the way Dhruva Maharaj was situated. I mean, he was the son of Uttanapad, who was the king, who was the emperor of the whole planet Earth. So why there should be any disturbance for Dhruva Maharaj? It will be very difficult for us to imagine that that you know, a small child like him should go through so much of disturbance. But he did. And in fact, the disturbance was caused by such an insignificant thing, like him wanting to climb onto the lap of his father. Now for a child, the lap of his father or the arms of his father are the most precious thing in the whole world. I mean, he's not concerned about anything else in this world. He just wants the security that his parents, you know, have to offer him. And if you see any child, you know, the smallest opportunity, you know, he will take in order to go and be with his parents. He'll go, you know, like we see even now, Chaitanya, although he's 8 years of age, you know, he'll just go running around, and all of a sudden he'll come and plonk himself on his father's lap. You know, and sometimes I would get miss a heartbeat, you know, thinking that, you know, so much weight falling on his father's lap, you know, his lap should actually but, you know, this is a child, you know, he just feels that my father is there, and, you know, his lap is so secure. And in fact, if you see today, psychologists, you know, they are so much you know, into this whole scientific analysis of how relationships work and how a person's whole psychological framework is made and how his mind is situated and how his personality gets developed. They are so much emphasizing on this particular aspect of how you need to provide a child with so much of protection, care, love, shelter at the beginning stage of his life. I remember an article that was, I mean, I had read about 40 years back, you know, in the Reader's Digest, very, very, you know, for me, I mean, I was just 10 years of age at that time. It was for me very revealing. And this was a team of psychologists, you know, in America, and they had conducted this research. And they had concluded, I mean, this was like a research paper that they had submitted, and they had concluded that how important it is to hug the child every day. Till the child is about 10 or 11 years of age. I mean, that was like a sutra that they had come out with. Just hug your child. A hug a day keeps the shrink away. You know, in America, a psychiatrist is called a shrink. Right? So a hug a day keeps the shrink away. I mean, this was like the sutra that they had come out with. And the whole article was talking about how important it is for the parents to, you know, give that much of, you know, physical love to the child. You know, what one may think, you know, isn't it sentimental? All the time showing affection for the child. And particularly in the US now, the whole concept is how to be independent. You know, how we need to give the child the independence so that he can develop into a proper human being. And for that, we need to keep our distance from him. Otherwise, you know, he'll become too attached to us. And if he becomes attached to us, how will his personality develop? But then we are seeing what is America today. You know, there is so much of, you know, insecurity. And why is it that children are going into drugs and alcoholism in such a big way? Because they are feeling so insecure. You know, the child, right from his young age, in fact, you know, practically from the time he's born, a few months old, maybe he spends 2 or 3 months with his parents. And then after that, he's given a separate room. Right? He's not even practically in the same room that his parents sleep in. You know, while the culture in India is completely different, of course, for different reasons sometimes, you know, we have just one room, right, and the whole family sleeps in that room, you know, the father, mother, grandfather, grandmother. But, you know, that actually creates so much of bonding among the children. You know, although the room may be small, the heart is big, and the children are feeling so protected, you know, and sheltered and cared for. And I remember, you know, till I was like 12 or 13 years of age, I used to sleep with my parents. And it was considered perfectly normal. But in the US now, if a person stays with his parents beyond the age of 16 years, he is considered to be abnormal. There's something wrong with him. You know, why is he staying with his parents? Is there something wrong with his mind? He's not developed. So there is tremendous amount of peer pressure requiring the child, even though he may be attached to his parents, you know, emotionally, to separate, to just leave the house. And he has to leave the house at the age of 16. So the whole emotional bonding that the child is craving for, and every child is craving for this, you know, just like Dhruva Maharaj at the age of 5, although he was the son of a king, I mean, he had practically all the material opulences that a child would ever possibly want. Right? In America today, if you want to give a child some opulences, you give him a room which is filled with toys. Right? In the US, the practice is to have a house which is at least 4 or 5 bedrooms. Right? Minimum. A typical middle class house, a middle class person in the US will have a house which is at least 4 or 5 bedrooms, out of which one bedroom will be given exclusively to toys for the children. The whole room will be filled with toys. And now some of the houses that we would visit, we would see that, you know, it's just unbelievable the number of toys, the different types of toys that the child could possibly play with. And I would wonder, how could the child possibly play with so many toys, you know, so many different types of toys? It's so creative in coming out with number of toys for the benefit of the children. So Dhruva had everything. But then, you know, he was craving for that warmth and love and care of his father. So he just wanted to climb onto the lap of his father like any other child. And what was most disturbing for Dhruva was not the harsh words of his mother, stepmother. I mean, he was of course very much affected by that. But he was more affected by the cold response of his father. You know, because for a son, his father is actually the role model, you know, the person to whom he looks up to, one whom he wants to emulate. And for him, actually, father is God, practically, at that age, at the age of 5 years. For him, his father is God. And, you know, so his stepmother gives him all these harsh words. You should have been born, I mean, you have to take birth in my womb in order to be able to sit on your father's lap. All the time he was looking at his father to see how his father was responding. And his father was so scared that he just kept quiet. And this was so much hurting to Dhruva. Just immediately he left the palace and went to his mother. And his mother, of course, we know that she could not provide any shelter to him. So he went to the forest. He meets Narad Muni. Narad Muni tells him, you know, what is this thing about leaving home? You're such a small child. You should not get affected by all this. Just go and play. But then Dhruva was a Kshatriya. So, you know, so he told Narad Muni, you please advise me how I can get a kingdom which is greater than what my great-grandfather has. Anyway, we know the whole pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. But the point is that this is what is most disturbing for a child. You know, when he sees that his parents don't support him, parents don't care for him, but that love that, you know, he's expecting from his parents, if he doesn't get it, there is so much of disturbance. Of course, nowadays, the concept of that love and care and affection has undergone a little bit of a change. I mean, I was actually quite surprised. Now, just recently, after my walk, I was just sitting at this Nariman Point area, you know, just opposite that NCPA. And I was just, I thought I'll chant a few rounds. You know, beautiful ocean breeze is blowing over there and everything is very peaceful, because that is one of the most peaceful parts of Bombay, actually. So I was sitting over there and just trying to chant the holy names, and all of a sudden a family, husband, wife, 2 children, like daughter was maybe 7 or 8 years of age and the son was maybe 5 or 6 years. A typical Maharashtrian, you know, family just come out to enjoy the evening. They came and sat over there, and the moment this lady moment they sat down, I mean, moment they settled down, the lady removed from her bag a packet of bail, and then she distributed it to all her, you know, to her husband, to the children. I was sitting and chatting my rounds, and all of a sudden, the child goes to the father, and, you know, he catches hold of his father and says, "Papa, Papa, tell me, how much money do you have in the bank?" And I was sitting right next to them, and I was thinking, you know, that this is an odd question for a child of 5 years to be asking his father. So his father said, anyway, father just thought, you know, that it is a very casual thing. So he said, just go and play, you know, just go and play. But then the son, after some time, again he came, and then he caught hold of his father and asked, "Papa, tell me how much money do you have in the bank?" So his father was quite annoyed, and then he said, "No, you go to your mother." His mother, you know, took him. And mother asked him in Hindi, "You know, why are you asking your father such a question? What does it concern you? How much money your father has in the bank?" And then the son, by the time, you know, I already started hearing their conversation. So then the son said, "Mama, you know what? Rahul must have been his classmate. Rahul's father has got a fixed deposit of 1 crore in the bank." And then he asks his mother, "Mother, tell me, what is 1 crore? And what is a fixed deposit?" He doesn't know, right? So he just knows that it is quite a bit of a big amount, but, you know. So Rahul's father has got 1 crore of rupees. So does my father have 1 crore rupees in his bank? Now his mother, I mean, what could she answer, you know? He said, "Well, maybe, I don't know, you'll have to ask your father." And, you know, she started dodging it that way. And then the son went again to the father and, "Father, please tell me, you know, how much money do you have in the bank?" And then, you know, father really became irritated with him and told him, "Get lost," you know. So then I decided, now it's time to move ahead. But I was just thinking that really this is Kali Yuga, you know. A child of 5 years is taking shelter in something which is completely, I mean, he should be taking shelter on his parents, you know, completely trusting his parents. But then they are discussing in school, at the age of 5 or 6, he must be 6 years of age, how much is a father's bank balance? You know, and they are taking shelter of such a thing, you know, which is completely, for that particular age, it's completely inconsequential. You know, it's of no relevance. I mean, so far as he gets his 2 square meals a day and he gets his, you know, clothes to wear and he is able to go to school, what more does a child want? Right? But this is what is the effect of Kali Yuga. You know, Dhruva Maharaj was looking for the shelter of his father's lap, and here this child was looking for his father's bank balance. You know. So this is the unfortunate situation that we have today. So this disturbance that Dhruva Maharaj faced was also faced by a completely different personality in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? It was faced by none other than an elephant by the name Gajendra. And if you see this beautiful pastime of Gajendra, as narrated by Sukadeva Goswami in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a lot of lessons to be learned from it. This particular place, I was hearing this class of Srila Prabhupada on the 8th canto, and Srila Prabhupada is explaining that actually if you see that this place where Gajendra was staying, it was a heavenly planet. I mean, you had this Trikuta mountain which is 10,000 yojanas high, right? Now 10,000 yojanas means 80,000 miles, right? When we read 10,000 yojanas, it really doesn't ring that big a bell in our heart. You know, okay, 10,000 yojanas, but a mountain which is 80,000 miles high, there is so much of description, you know, if you go into the internet about how high Mount Everest is, right, and how many people have died trying to climb a Mount Everest. You know, huge number of people, I think thousands of people have died that's recorded. The number of people who might have died, which is not recorded, must be far, far greater, right? And this is like a small, insignificant mountain which is just 10 kilometers high, right, 6 miles. But you have this 80,000 miles high mountain which is also 80,000 miles in length, which is also 80,000 miles in breadth, right? So this is Trikuta Mountain, and you know, it's so beautiful, such a beautiful description Sukadeva Maharaj gives. You know, this whole place is surrounded by the milk ocean, and the waves of the milk ocean, they come inside and then they create emeralds. And the whole beach is surrounded by small gems. They're not sand particles, you know, the sand particles that you get in Chopati Beach. These are gems, actual gems, right? Which actually must be so valuable. And yet they are, you know, the whole beach is covered with all those gems. And the birds singing, and I'm sure the weather must be, although that is not described, the weather must be perfect, just 24 degrees like we have in Hawaii. Like Srila Prabhupada said, that if there is paradise on earth, this is it. You know, Hawaii is a place. I mean, although I have not had the fortune to go there, but we have heard so much about this place. It is actually, I mean, for an American, if he wants to have a vacation, he will go to Hawaii. Right? Because America, for all its opulence, or whatever we may perceive to be opulence, actually it's a pretty intense place, you know, the weather-wise. You know, you have extreme cold and you have extreme heat. Right? So, for an American, if he wants to go on a holiday, he goes to Hawaii. So, the Trikuta Mountain area was actually like Hawaii. Very, very beautiful in terms of scenic beauty, in terms of weather, in terms of the climate. And this elephant, you know, he was the king of the elephants. He was Gajendrapati. He was Gajapati. Right? His name was Gajendra, but he was a Gajapati. He was the king of the elephants. And his whole family, they were going. And you know, here there's one word that Sukadeva Goswami mentions, which really had me thinking, you know, what would be the size of Gajendra? Sukadeva Goswami describes that as Gajendra was going, Trikuta Mountain was trembling. I was just thinking to myself, you know, I mean, 80,000 miles high mountain, and it is trembling at the time when Gajendra is walking, you know, over there. That was the size. We can't even imagine. Kali Yuga elephants are very small, but this elephant must have been really, really huge in size and completely intoxicated. You know, his eyes were rolling, and then he comes to this lake. Apparently, he is in a complete state of enjoyment from a material point of view. Everything is going on fantastic in his life. You know, his family is there, his children are there, everybody is looking up to him, and everybody is doting on him, and they are all giving him fantastic amount of respect, and you know, everything is going on nicely in his life. There's nothing in his life that is actually causing him any disturbance. Right? He's a king. He's not even just a subject. He's not an ordinary elephant. He's a king of the elephants, right? He's got his whole retinue of wives and children who are following him, and you know, everybody is very happy to be under his shelter. Until he comes to this lake, and you know, he's frolicking there and drinking that cool water, and you know, because he's severely intoxicated. You know, when you are intoxicated, you develop a huge amount of thirst, right? And so just in order to slacken his thirst, he was drinking this cool water, and he became completely satiated. And just at that time, by the will of providence, an alligator came, a crocodile came and grabbed at the feet of Gajendra. And Gajendra thought that, what's so great about this crocodile? You know, after all, I'm the king of the elephants. When I walk in the jungle, you know, tigers and lions and sharabas and, you know, all these animals are just walking out of my path. They're running away in fear. What's an alligator, you know? What's a crocodile? He was not at all impressed. And he was thinking that, you know, but then, when he saw that he was not able to get himself out of that situation, he was getting agitated. And then all his family members, they all tried their level best to catch hold of him and pull him out of the water, and he was putting all his strength, immense strength. But there was no use. The alligator was a really, crocodile was a really powerful crocodile. So 1,000 years, 1,000 years this fight went on between the crocodile and Gajendra, and finally Gajendra just, you know, had to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He realized that, you know, there's nothing that he can do. And that's the time when really he had to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Having just been to the US, I sort of just was meditating that from a material point of view, right? At least for Indians, all of us, the United States of America, in fact they call it the land of opportunity. Just like how Kerala is called as God's own country, right? The United States of America is a land of opportunity. It beckons you, it welcomes you. And actually if you go to see America till about 250 years back, what was it? It was a land which was controlled by these Red Indians, you know, aboriginals, you know, from a spiritual point of view, out of this 400,000 species of human beings or living entities who are in the human form of life, you know, they must be practically right down in the bottom of the hierarchy, you know, because no concept of God, you know, just living off the land, may not be even wearing clothes, just with a spear and, you know, with a bow and arrow, killing animals, eating the flesh. So that was America till about 250 years back. You know, then the whites went and then they developed the place. So in that sense, today America is a very open country. You know, they welcome people from all races and all tribes. You know, anybody is welcomed over there because they basically are not from America. The people who are the whites in America, they are not actually Americans. The Americans are the Red Indians, right? So the whites are also alien in one sense to America. So, you know, they are very broad-minded and, you know, they come and they are ready to welcome anybody to come and, you know, work over there. You know, they have certain requirements, and so far as you fulfill those requirements, they are very happy to get you, right? And from a purely material point of view, all over America, it's a very beautiful place, and that's how they have maintained it over the years. Over the last 100-200 years, there is so much of respect for the environment, the ecology, everything is, you know, very highly revered and protected. And you know, the Americans are basically very, very intense and intensely protective about the environment. So the moment you land off the aeroplane, you'll be able to smell America, you know, fresh air. And particularly if you go to the countryside, the air is even more fresh. It's like early in the morning, the air is so, you know, it's so invigorating, it's so wonderful. You feel enlivened just by breathing in the air, and it is healthy. You know, there's so less of pollution. People really feel, you know. And I remember Govind Prabhu also was there when we were in America this time, and he was remarking that the only best thing about America is the air. You know, so many aspects about America which are not really so good, but which we will discuss. But the thing is that as far as the air is concerned, yes, it's fantastic. And then of course the roads are so beautiful, you know, and actually the roads are just about 70-80 years old, but the roads are so well maintained. There is one road, it's called the I-90, Interstate 90, which goes right from Seattle to Boston, right? It cuts across the whole East Coast to West Coast, and that particular road, one road, is 3,100 miles, nearly 4,900 kilometers. So can you imagine, you know, from Kanyakumari to Kashmir to Kanyakumari, the distance is just 3,500 kilometers. So can you imagine if there was a road right from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, a six-lane road, you know, then you would call India as a developed country, right? If you have such a beautiful road. And there is such a road in America, you know, goes right from the East Coast to the West Coast. It's called the I-90. It was built in 1954. And one of the most prestigious roads for. So it's, and you know, traffic, you can go at 70 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, that's 100 kilometers comfortably, you know, absolutely no problem. There's no strain. You know, people travel like 800 miles a day. you know, takes about 11-12 hours, but you can just drive, you know, just absolutely no strain on yourself. And you know, most of the cars, they don't have any gears, so you just have a steering wheel and an accelerator and a brake, right? And now they have brought out these cars with cruise control. Now what it means is that once the car achieves a particular speed, let's say 70 miles an hour, you put that button, you press that button which is there on your steering wheel, and then you don't even have to press the accelerator. Then the car keeps going at 70 miles an hour till you press the brake. The moment you press the brake, then you get full control over the car. It's something like the autopilot that we have in the aeroplane, right? So the only thing that he has to do is to just keep, you know, steering the wheel. That's all. There's no need for him to put the brake because, you know, there's hardly any traffic and you just keep going at 70, 80 miles an hour. Beautiful sports facilities. Wherever you go, you will come across, there is, you know, every neighborhood, they have their own lawn tennis pitches, they have their own public swimming pool. There's so much of stress that the government gives on sports and recreation. You know, there'll be beautiful lakes which are well developed, maintained by the government, and boating facilities. And every person who is of substance would have his own boat. You know, you have arrived in America if you own a house and a boat, right? You should have a boat in your backyard. And you know, in summer, of course, summer is just 3-4 months a year, but in summer you will see everybody practically on weekends, you know, hitching their boats onto their car and then going to the lake, or they will go to the ocean, and then the whole day they will spend out over there. So there is, you know, facilities are like so fantastic to take care of the people's recreation and you know, their health and everything works so nicely. You know, the traffic is extremely well regulated. If there's a signboard over there which says that you should travel at 30 miles an hour, people travel at 30 miles an hour. It's not that people travel at 50 miles or 60 miles if you are on the highway, you have to travel at 70 miles an hour. You cannot come down below a particular speed, right? So for us, you know, after seeing all this, you know, from here to Dadar, 8 kilometers, it takes sometimes 2 hours, right? A distance of 8 kilometers in the US would take 5 minutes. I mean, it's not even a situation for introspection. Now people work, their homes are like 80 miles from their offices are like, you know, it's 80 miles. People regularly travel every day, 80 miles up and 80 miles down. Right now, 80 miles is halfway to Pune for us. So would you imagine, I mean, people traveling by car, such a long distance back and forth. And there's no stress. I mean, people just, so there's, you know, so this is like the Trikuta mountain description, you know, US is like that. But then also there are so many crocodiles over there, which begin right from the time, you know, we want to get a visa for the United States of America in India, right? To get a US visa is a process by itself. You know, so many documents and so many references and so many letters you have to get from there, and there has to be one person in the US who has to sponsor you. He has to send his pay slip, which means his income certificate, his tax returns, and so many documents have to be sent. And then you carry, you know, practically when you go to the consulate, I remember when we went for our visa in 2006, like we had one, each of us, two huge folders and all sorts of documents. And fortunately for us, we had already traveled to a few countries before, so we didn't anticipate any difficulty in getting a visa. So we went over there and, you know, we submitted our papers, and she asked a few questions, and you know, which country among all the countries that you traveled you like the best, and you know, some very innocuous questions, and then after that she said yes, have a nice trip to US, which means that yes, you've got a visa. So you know, it's so amazing that we were just leaving the, we were exiting the consulate, and just we had reached the door, and just at that time, you know, from the backside, there was a loud wail, shrieking. There was a huge commotion, and you know, my heart missed a beat, and I was just thinking what happened, you know. And then that security guard who was there, I just asked him, "Kya ho gaya? You know, kya ho gaya? Nahin, visa reject hua hoga." And I said, so why so much of commotion? Ye to tamasha har roj hota hai idhar. You know, every day, he said at least two or three cases, people's visas get rejected. I mean, the number of visas that get rejected are far more than the ones that get approved in the US consulate. So anyway, so he said at least two or three dramas every day we see over here. You know, and I just turned back and I was seeing that the husband, there was a wife and three children. And this lady was sitting down on the ground and she was wailing. She was literally, you know, crying, and you know, the husband was standing by her side and he was having a woebegone expression on his face, and children were all so agitated. So I thought, these people are in real distress. They are really disturbed. So I thought, why not I go and just do a little bit of preaching to them, you know? When a person is in distress, that's the right time to preach, right? So I thought I'll go over there. I went to him and then I asked him, you know, Saab, kya ho gaya? So he said, mera visa reject ho gaya. So then he said, tisra bar reject ho gaya hamara visa. No, it's really, I mean, he's also almost on the verge of tears. And then I said, to kya ho gaya saab, aap wapas aa sakte hain? Nahi, nahi, tisra bar reject ho gaya, matlab permanent. No more visas to America. I can't even make an application now. So then I said, to kya ho gaya saab, hamara Bharat Mahan, we have to be so much attached to our country, so you didn't get a chance to go to US, so what? You know, just understand how valuable your place is, and this is all Lord's arrangement, ye Bhagwan ka icha hai, and this and that, I started telling him. So then he said, aapko bolna bahut aasan hai, aap kidhar ke hai? First he asked me, did you get your visa? So I said, haan saab, humko hamara visa mil gaya. So then he looked at me, aap kidhar ke ho? I said, I'm from Kerala, you know, I'm from Palakkad in Kerala. So he said, haan, isliye aapko visa mila. हम लोग गुजराती हैं, मेरा सरनेम पटेल है, और पटेल को कभी वीजा मिलते नहीं है. काश मैं भी अगर केरला में बॉर्न होता था तो कितना अच्छा होता था. यू नो, एंड आई एम जस्ट थिंकिंग टू माई सेल्फ, ऑल दिस फॉर द सेक ऑफ गोइंग टू अमेरिका. सो एनीवे, दिस इज द फर्स्ट क्रोकोडाइल दैट अ पर्सन एनकाउंटर्स. यू नो, ही गोज टू द यूएस कॉन्सुलेट एंड फाइनली ओके ही गेट्स अ वीजा, एंड देन ही कम्स टू, then he boards the plane and comes to wherever, whichever part of US that he lands down. Things are not going to be easy again. So he comes, he goes to the immigration, he presents his visa, passport over there. He's got a 10-year visa, right? The US consulate here is certified that he is eligible. Now he goes over there and he presents his, that person doesn't even look at him. Huh? That guy who's sitting over there, he doesn't even look at him. He said, how many days are you going to stay here? So then, sir, I'm going to stay here for 2 months. How much money do you have? Hari? Sir, I have $2,000. I actually had $2,000 with me. So, $2,000 for 2 months? That is not adequate. What are your other sources of money that you are going to be? Then I said, no, sir, don't worry, I got credit cards with me. Then I took out the credit cards and showed him, sir, these are my credit cards. You know, okay. So, where are you going to be staying when you are in the US? I mean, this is like, you know, Prabhupada was saying that dogs, you know, barking questions at you, damn, like, you know. And 4 or 5 questions later, I was really completely, and this is the first time I'm talking about, first time that I visited the US in 2006. So, and then, you know, people are coming out of the, you know, I see, you know, so I got out. He stamped my visa and then I came out, and then a lot of Indians were behind me, and then they all went, got, and then they asked them the same questions, must be, and they all came, and then they were feeling so relieved, you know, now I am in USA, you know, they were feeling so relieved to themselves that, you know, finally we have been granted entry into this God's own country, you know, into this land of opportunity. And you won't believe it, every time you visit the US, it's the same story. Every time he's going to be asking you the same question. You might have gone there 10 times. But he will still ask you, how much money do you have? How many days are you going to stay here? Where are you going to be staying? And you know, the questions are asked in such a, you know, strong way. I mean, there are different ways of asking questions, but, you know. So this is, then you cross the second crocodile of, you know, the US, the immigration over there. And then you come to America, things are not rosy over there also. You know, there is, if you really want to analyze the economic situation today in America, it's pretty pathetic, right? Jobs are so scarce. People are so feeling so insecure, you know, and you could be just like one day in the morning, like one of our devotees, you know, one of our God brothers in Seattle, he was in India. He had come here to do Bhakti Shastri. He completed his Bhakti Shastri. He had taken 3 months of vacation and then he came over here. When he went back to Seattle, and one day went to his, the day he was supposed to report, he came to know that his job was not there. His job is gone. I mean, the whole department shut down. And then they told him that just go to the HR. He was given a letter. Your services are terminated. That's it. And it took him 2 months after that to get a job. You know, unfortunately, of course, he was a US citizen. So, you know, for US citizens, the chances of you getting a job is much higher. But if you go on a visa and you lose your job, then you have to take a plane back home. There's no way out. Right? If you're what is called the H-1B visa. If you're going on that visa, the only option for you is to catch the next plane and come back home. Right? So, when an Indian goes to America, he's hankering from a visa status, he has to move to a green card status. You know, there is what is called as a green card. Now, the moment you get a green card, it means that you can switch jobs. You know, if you don't like an employer, if you're working with somebody and you don't like him, you can quit that job and move to another job. But if you're on a visa status, you can't do that. Right? And they keep you on a visa status for 6 to 7 years. And you are so insecure. So naturally, when you're feeling insecure, you'll go out of your way to please your boss. Right? So people end up working 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours. It's the same situation what we have here in India. It's no different. Right? Everything outside is so beautiful. You know, the weather is nice and fresh air. But you are sitting in your office, cooped up, doing your work. Might as well be in Bombay. You know, for all the stress and insecurity that you are feeling in the US. Right? So this is the, and but still there's so much of hankering from our side. You know, we would like to go to US, and you know, like this Patel family in this US consulate, you know, their whole life goal has been completely disturbed, you know. So this is the material world. And Srila Prabhupada, in a very beautiful purport on this pastime of Gajendra, I'll just read this very briefly. We have just maybe 2 or 3 minutes. In the 32nd shloka, Srila Prabhupada, the translation is, Sukadeva Goswami says, the other elephants who are my friends and relatives could not rescue me from the danger. What then to speak of my wives? They cannot do anything. It is by the will of providence that I have been attacked by this crocodile, and therefore I shall seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always the shelter of everyone, even of great personalities. And Srila Prabhupada in this beautiful purport says that when we are in difficulty, the only recourse that we have is to seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'll just read the purport. This material world is described as padam padam yadvi padam, which means that at every step there is a danger. A fool wrongly thinks that he is happy in this material world, but in fact he is not. For one who thinks that way is only illusioned. At every step, at every moment, there is danger. In modern civilization, one thinks that if he has a nice home and a nice car, his life is perfect. In the Western countries, especially in America, it is very nice to possess a good car. But as soon as one is on the road, there is a danger, because at any moment an accident may take place and one is killed. The record actually shows that so many people die in such accidents. Therefore, if we actually think that this material world is a very happy place, this is our ignorance. Real knowledge is that this material world is full of danger. We may struggle for existence as far as our intelligence allows, and may try to take care of ourselves, but unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, ultimately saves us from danger, our attempts will be useless. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.19, we may invent so many ways to be happy or to counteract the dangers of this material world, but unless our attempts are sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will never make us happy. Those who try to be happy without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are mudas, rascals. Namam duskritino muda prapadyante naradamaha. those who are the lowest of men refuse to take to Krishna consciousness because they think that they will be able to protect themselves without Krishna's care. This is their mistake. The decision of the king of the elephants, Gajendra, was correct. In such a dangerous position, he sought shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande Haribol.